Chapter 9. On Christmas Eve morning, Sabrina, Daphne, Granny Relda, Mr. Canis, Mr. Hamstead, Bess, Mustard Seed, Puck, Titania, Oz, and a slew of fairies stood on a desolate bank of the Hudson River. On the shore was a boat carved from the trunk of an enormous tree. Inside, Oberon's body rested, gently rising and falling with the river's waves. A long sword was in his hands, and he was wearing a suit of leather armor with a lion painted on the chest plate. Titania gave a speech, wishing her husband a safe passage into the next world. She placed a red rose on his chest, which she said had been grown in the fairy homeland, and then she stepped aside. Mustard Seed followed, sharing memories of his father, his bravery in days long ago, his struggles as fairy's new home in America collapsed, and even his plans to rebuild. He placed a white rose next to his mother's red. Then it was Puck's turn to speak. "My father was a complicated man, one of strong traditions. He had unbendable beliefs, and those beliefs often got in the way of new beginnings. He wanted the best for us, but he didn't always know how to make that happen, and he was easily frustrated when we disagreed. As I am the new king of fairy, his blood will endure." Puck tossed a green rose onto his father's chest. One of the ogres from the Golden Egg stepped forward with a torch and handed it to Puck. The boy fairy took it and set the boat ablaze. Then he and his brother pushed it out into the water. The flames quickly engulfed the floating casket, and the river took it away. Soon, it was out of sight. Oz stepped up to the Fairyport landing group. "I suppose you'll be leaving soon?" Granny Relda nodded.
"We've got to get back home and see if we can wake up the girl's parents."
"I wish you the best of luck," Oz said as he turned to the girls and shook their hands. "Well, I've got to get back to work. It's Christmas Eve, and another one of the elves is on the fritz." The crowd began to drift away. Granny suggested they return to their hotel for some rest before the long drive home. Sabrina said she'd be along in a minute and then turned back toward Puck. He was discussing something with his brother. Mustard Seed nodded, and his wings popped out of his back. He took to the sky and flew away. Sabrina walked over to join Puck. He didn't notice her at first, but when he did, he quickly wiped his tears on his sleeve. He forced a smile, but then let it fade. She reached out and took his hand, and they stood looking out at the river in silence.
"So, what do I call you? Your Majesty?"
"You should have been calling me that all along," Puck said.
"What you said was very nice," Sabrina said.
"My mother wrote it for me. She didn't care too much for what I came up with myself."
Sabrina smiled. "There's no one here now. Why don't you go ahead with your version?"
Puck tilted his head curiously at Sabrina and smiled.
"My father was mean, arrogant, horrible, and selfish. He cared little for anyone and less for those who disagreed with him. His only love was for his precious kingdom."
Sabrina raised her eyebrows, admiring the boy's honesty, but remained quiet. Puck turned to the water as if his father were still there, listening. "I hated you," he shouted. "You took every opportunity to remind me that I was weak and stupid."
Suddenly, Puck fell to his knees. Tears streamed down his cheeks. Sabrina rushed to him, knelt down, and used her scarf to wipe them away.
"When I was barely out of diapers, he took me aside and told me I would never be king. He said I was a disappointment to him, and he would never give up his throne to me. I went to my mother in tears, and she explained him to me. She said he was worried about the kingdom's future and feared that his successor would destroy it, even if that successor was his own son. But my mother swore that one day I would wear the crown, and he would never see it coming. Until then, I would have my own kingdom. Then she gave me my name, the Trickster King. I've worn it proudly ever since. When I got older, he tried to force me to marry Moth.
So I told the old man he was nuts. Disobeying your father is a crime in our world. He banished me. But here I am, the king of fairy anyway. My mother was right. He never saw it coming. He stood up and wiped his eyes on his sleeve. If you tell anyone I was crying, you'll regret it, Pusbrain. I won't tell, Stinkpot, Sabrina said affectionately. Looks like you and me finally have something in common. What's that? Families we're not sure we want to be part of, Sabrina replied. The old lady told me you're quitting, Puck said. I'm not quitting. I'm retiring. You can't quit something you never wanted to do in the first place, Sabrina said defensively. You can't quit something you never tried either. I tried, but people got hurt when I tried, Sabrina said. Look at Mr. Canis and you. Oh, poor Sabrina, such a walking disaster. I was there. Mr. Canis didn't get hurt because you were being stupid. You were the one that saved him, and the rest of us. If you hadn't done what you did, we'd all be dead. The truth is, and I hate to admit it, but you're a hero and a pretty good one. You help people when no one else can. From what I hear, that's what your mother did too. It's in your blood, and blood isn't something you can walk away from. When did you suddenly become Mr. Maturity? Puck laughed. Don't worry, it won't last. Then he belched in her face. See? It's over. So, I guess you're going to have to stay and take over what's left of Fairy, Sabrina said softly. Before Puck could answer, there was a loud commotion up on the hill overlooking the river. People were shouting and screaming. Puck and Sabrina looked at each other and then ran to find out what was going on. Mr. Hampstead was lying on the ground. Bess knelt beside him. Tony Fats was hovering above the couple with clenched fists. Poor Mr. Hampstead looked as if he had been socked in the eye.
I told you to leave my girl alone, Tony Fats yelled.
And I told you I'm not your girl anymore, Tony, Bess cried.
Mr. Hampstead crawled to his feet.
Bess, I can handle this.
He turned to Tony Fats.
Is this how you want to do it? That's fine with me.
The two men rushed at each other, throwing fists and landing horrible blows. Tony Fats was the first to fall, but he quickly got up and knocked Mr. Hampstead into a mud puddle. The portly man fell with a painful thud. Sabrina spotted Mr. Canis in the crowd. He was watching as if he had no concern for his friend. Sabrina raced to him and tugged on his sleeve.
We have to stop this. Mr. Hampstead is going to get hurt.
Mr. Canis shook his head.
The pig is tougher than he looks, child.
Tony Fats is twice his size, Sabrina cried.
And the wolf is four times his size, and Hampstead had no trouble taking me down. As I said, he's tougher than he looks.
Tony Fats kicked Hampstead mercilessly, forcing him to flounder in the mud. Each time their friend tried to get up, Tony attacked, keeping him on his hands and knees.
You don't come to my town and steal my girl, Tony Fats bellowed. You don't know who you're messing with.
Leave him alone, Tony,
Bess demanded. Tony's face twisted into a demented smile.
I've got to teach your friend here how we do it in the big city.
He lifted his leg to deliver another nasty kick, but this time Hampstead caught it. He pulled hard, and Tony Fats fell onto his back. Hampstead leaped onto him, and the two men wrestled for dominance. Then, all at once, Sabrina saw a magic wand appear in Tony Fats' hand.
Hampstead, look out!
Canis roared. Mr. Hampstead must have spotted the wand himself as he sent an elbow into Tony's gut. The fairy godfather let out a wheeze and dropped the wand, but then scampered to get it back. Hampstead was right on top of him, and the two fought for control over the weapon. They rolled around in the mud, struggling viciously. But just as Mr. Hampstead gained the upper hand, a transformation came over him. His arms and legs suddenly shrank into stubby, hoofed feet. His clothes disappeared, and his pink skin blanched white. His ears migrated up his head and turned into furry points. In a matter of seconds, Mr. Hampstead's true form was revealed. He was a pig. But he was a pig with a magic wand in his snout. He flicked his head in a circle, and a beam of magic shot out of the starry tip. It hit Tony Fats. There was a puff of smoke, and when it disappeared, the big fairy godfather was gone, replaced with a beady-eyed rat. The rat twittered, sized up the enormous pig hovering over him, shrieked, and then raced off, disappearing over the hill.
"I told you so," Mr. Canis mumbled.
Sabrina nodded. She had to admit Mr. Hampstead was a lot more resourceful than she had ever given him credit for being. Daphne raced to the enormous pig and gave him a big hug around the neck.
"I'm so proud of you, Mr. Hampstead," the little girl said. "Ernie," a voice said from behind them.
The pig looked up, and Sabrina followed his gaze. Bess was standing there, looking confused and shocked.
"Ernie, you're a pig."
Mr. Hampstead had suddenly morphed back to his human form. He looked as if he wanted to be a million miles away.
"I'm a pig, Bess. One of the three little pigs. I should have told you. It wasn't fair. I'm sorry."
Hampstead turned abruptly, pushed his way through the crowd, and disappeared.
"Ernie!"
Bess cried after him. But he was gone.
"We should go get him,"
Daphne said to her grandmother.
"No, Liebling," Granny said sadly. "He needs some time to himself."
When they got back to the hotel, Mr. Canis decided to meditate while they waited for Hampstead to show up. The old man was sure the traffic out of town would test his temper. Granny bought a suitcase so they could pack the few things the family had purchased during their stay in the city. While they packed, they enjoyed a big lunch, compliments of room service. Puck, who had come to see them off, spent most of the afternoon talking to the numerous pixies who visited at the hotel window. He gave them several orders and answered their questions, and they raced off to do his bidding. King Puck was already hard at work. Sabrina slipped into the bathroom for some privacy. She washed her face, brushed her teeth, and studied herself in the mirror. She had her father's golden hair and blue eyes, but her face was Veronica's. She knew when she was older she would look a lot like her mother. But as her mother's features stared back at her, she wondered why she hadn't gotten more of her mother's spirit. Why had Veronica chosen to take on the family responsibility? Why had she chosen such a dangerous life? If only Veronica were awake and Sabrina could ask her. She took her mother's pink wallet out of her pocket and opened it. Inside was the picture of Veronica, Sabrina, and Daphne. Next to it was the business card of her mother's best friend, Oz Diggs, also known as the Wonderful Wizard of Oz, a man who claimed to know her better than anyone. And suddenly, Sabrina had an idea. She burst out of the bathroom and found Daphne and Puck finishing off three huge hot fudge sundaes.
"I want to talk to Oz," Sabrina said to her grandmother.
"Sabrina, we should get on the road as soon as rush hour is over. I thought you wanted to get back home so you could help wake up your mother and father," Granny said.
"This is about my mother and father," Sabrina said. "Please, I need to ask him some questions. I need to understand my mother."
Sabrina, Daphne, Granny Relda, and Puck took a taxi down to 34th Street. It was evening by the time they reached Macy's, and there was a steady stream of exhausted shoppers flooding out of the doors. But the family managed to squirm their way inside. The store security guard blocked their path, frowned, and tapped his watch.
"Christmas Eve, folks. We're closing in 5 minutes."
"We're not buying anything. We're looking for the wizard," Sabrina said.
"The who?"
"We're looking for Mr. Diggs," Granny interrupted.
"He's probably in his workroom," the guard grumbled. "Just don't dilly-dally, all right? Some of us would like to go home."
They found Oz's workroom. Sabrina knocked once and waited patiently for several minutes, but no one answered.
"Come on," Puck said as he opened the door and pushed Sabrina inside.
Children, we are intruding, Granny worried. He might be in the back and can't hear us, Daphne said, pulling the old woman inside. The room was as big of a mess as the first time they had seen it. Several tables had parts on them that were still moving, including a head that kept opening its eyes and lifting its brows in surprise. Tools were scattered around the room, some of them seeming to have found permanent homes on the floor.
Ugh! Do you smell that? Puck asked.
No, what are you talking about? Sabrina said defensively. She thought the cocoon smell had finally faded, but worried that maybe she was just getting used to it.
Hard work. I smell hard work in here. It's horrible, Puck said as he picked up a circuit board and examined it. I might gag.
Oz? Sabrina called out. But there was no answer, only the buzz of electric engines. Oz, I want to ask you about my mother.
Perhaps we should sit and wait for him, Granny said.
Sabrina hoped the security guards wouldn't lock them inside, but she took her grandmother's advice and sat down on a stool. When Daphne did the same, a robotic head that was sitting on the table next to her sprang to life and started giggling. The little girl screamed and snatched a hammer off the table, then smacked the head a couple times until it stopped laughing.
Relax, Sabrina said.
You taught him a lesson, didn't you, Marshmallow?
Puck said, as he took the hammer from the little girl. He hit the head himself for good measure and scanned the room for something else to beat on. After a while, he sat down and started peeking through a stack of papers on the desk.
Don't snoop, Granny Relda scolded.
Then someone better keep me entertained, 'cause this is boring, Puck replied.
Sabrina got up and took the papers away from the fairy.
This is his stuff. Some of it might be private.
She tried to collect them in a neat stack, but shoved in the middle of the pile was something quite different. A small, leather-bound journal with gold writing on its cover. Fairy tale accounts, June 1992 to present, Veronica Grimm. Sabrina felt her heart rocking in her chest. With trembling fingers, she picked up the book and opened it.
What did you find? Granny Relda said.
It's my mother's journal, Sabrina replied. Veronica's curvy, slightly sloppy script filled every page. There were hundreds of entries chronicling her experiences with the ever-afters of both Ferryport Landing and New York City. Sabrina read feverishly, turning pages faster and faster, absorbing as much as she could about her mother's secret life. There was story after story of the lives she had changed. She had helped people move, find jobs, and track down missing friends. And she had done plenty of detective work as well. On one of the pages, she wrote, "My work with these people is exciting, fascinating, and most of all, important. I've found that there is more to being a Grimm than Henry ever told me. It's more than being a detective. Sometimes I'm the only hope an ever after has of making it in this world. If only I could get them to work together." Sabrina flipped to the back and found several folded pages from a yellow legal pad covered with writing. She read through them, including all the scratched-out parts and tiny notes in the margins. It was a speech. This is the speech everyone was talking about. It was her plan for the ever-afters. She was supposed to give it the day she disappeared, Sabrina said.
Then what is Oz doing with it?
Daphne asked, taking the journal from her sister. Granny got up from her chair.
Lieblings, I think it would be wise of us to...
A voice from the shadows cut her off.
Oh, I wish you hadn't found that.
Oz stepped into the light.
Your mother was a remarkable woman, Sabrina. She had a charisma that was almost, well, supernatural. She could convince people to do anything she wanted. It was a talent I always envied. Your mother collected an army of supporters using only her smile. And I was one of them. I loved the little adventures we used to get into. She was part saint, part detective, and for a long time I thought I wanted to be like her.
But then I would come into work every day and have my boss criticize the displays. I'd go home to my little apartment in Queens and spend the rest of my time holding the hand of King Oberon. And it dawned on me that my life had taken a turn for the worse. I used to be the great and terrible Oz. I was the ruler of an entire nation. People feared me. What had happened?
"You're talking in circles, wizard," Puck said, drawing his wooden sword from a loop around his waist.
"Kids, they always want the short version." "Fine. One day I was approached by a man who offered me something more. He promised me that there would come a day when the city would need a leader to rule both ever after and human alike. So I signed up to be a member of the Scarlet Hand."
Sabrina gasped.
"Then you killed Oberon. You put the mark on his chest."
"Oh, no, Moth killed him. I just took advantage of the situation in order to announce the coming of my master's army. I put the mark on Oberon's chest when I found him dead, then escaped just before his body was discovered. I'm no murderer."
"But you are a kidnapper. How else would you have my mother's journal?"
"It was part of my deal with the master, Sabrina. In exchange for your parents, I get to rule this city."
"And how do you plan on doing that?" Puck asked.
"Why, by taking over the world," he said. "The master is attempting nothing short of world domination. And not a minute too soon, either. The humans have had control for long enough. Look at what they've done with their time. The world is a cesspool of pollution, hate, and greed. It's time for the ever-afters to start running the show."
"And Henry and Veronica were in the way," Granny Relda said.
"I'm not proud of what I've done, but unfortunately, yes. Veronica was a brilliant, insightful woman with big ideas. She wanted to unite this city under one government. She actually thought these fools could work together. I couldn't allow that. I have to keep this community in chaos until I can claim the city as mine. An organized population of ever-afters would be difficult to topple."
"So you kidnapped my mom and dad. You put them to sleep," Daphne cried.
"Yes to the first, no to the second. I lured them out, promising your mother I would help her with her speech and encouraging her to reveal her double life to your father. Once I had them, I turned them over to the master. I had no idea they were still alive until you arrived here."
Suddenly, there was a loud bang, and the lights went off in the building. The security guards were closing the store.
"Now, about that book. There's a speech inside that I need to get back. You can keep the journal, but no one can ever hear Veronica's speech. You and your family can go back to Ferryport Landing. Your mother and father's usefulness to the master is over, and as long as you stay out of the way, you'll live. Not a bad trade."
"No chance," Sabrina said.
The wizard reached into his pocket and removed his small silver remote.
"Then, so be it."
He pushed a button, and at once every little robot head turned toward them with electrical eyes blazing. The machines that could move charged at them, some dragging half-assembled bodies. Puck swatted a few away with his wooden sword, but one of the mechanical birds swooped down and snatched the journal out of Sabrina's hand. It immediately flew back to Oz and gave him its prize. Then Oz ran. The family had to fight through the crowd of misfit robots to chase after him as he dashed out of the workroom and through the empty store. It was mostly dark, but there were a few security lights on, so it was easy to follow him. But he kept overturning racks of clothing and merchandise in the family's path. Puck stopped, spun around on his heels, and quickly transformed into a bull with huge horns. He bent his head down, stomped his front hooves a few times, blasted a breath out of his nostrils, and then charged forward, tossing the obstacles out of the way. The women raced close behind. They watched Oz take the escalator up to the floor above. Puck transformed back to his normal state, then raced up the escalator two stairs at a time. Sabrina wasn't far behind. Daphne stayed back to help Granny along. They chased Oz up five flights, with Puck still in the lead. They were racing through the sporting goods department when Sabrina saw Puck flail through the air and slam into a nearby wall. Then, something came around the corner at her. Sabrina had seen it many times before as a young girl. She had associated it with sugar plum dreams. Now it made her think of nightmares. It was a 7-foot-tall nutcracker, painted to look like a red-coated soldier with a white beard. Its most horrible feature was a gaping mouth that smashed closed every few moments as if it were gnashing its teeth.
"Oh, dear," Granny said as she and Daphne came up behind Sabrina.
Puck crawled to his feet, rushed behind the nutcracker, and delivered a well-placed kick to its behind. The robot turned and lunged at him.
"They don't sell explosives in this store, do they?"
Puck shouted as he dodged the creature's massive arm.
"They sell everything else,"
Sabrina said, glancing at a store directory on the wall.
"Wait a minute. Sporting goods. We're on the sporting goods floor."
With Puck keeping the monster's attention, she and her family raced around, choosing weapons. Daphne found a tennis racket, which she swung wildly at the robot, but her racket turned into splinters when it got caught in the nutcracker's deadly jaws. Granny found a couple of soccer balls, but when she raced back to use them on the robot, it easily deflected her blows.
"What's that thing?"
Puck said. He was pointing to an odd machine that said Pitchmaster on the side. The contraption had a pump that shot balls through a tube at super speeds. Sabrina guessed it was to teach batters how to hit fastballs. Fastballs. She flipped the machine on and pushed a button, and a baseball rocketed out of the tube and hit a nearby mannequin, knocking its head off its shoulders.
"Oh, I've got to get me one of those things," Puck said. "Do you think it will shoot balloons filled with donkey poo?"
Sabrina ignored Puck's disgusting idea and shouted to her sister,
"Help me turn this toward the nutcracker."
When they had the machine lined up, Sabrina hit the button again, and a ball screamed out of the tube and hit the nutcracker in the chest. The force was so incredible, it left a huge dent. The creature turned, a red light flashing in its mechanical eyes. It rushed at them so quickly, the only thing to do was push the button on the ball machine and hold it down. A ball crashed into the robot's face, knocking a metal panel off and revealing its wiring. Then another slammed into its right leg. Each ball knocked the robot back, but each time it recovered and kept coming at them. Sabrina quickly studied the Pitchmaster's controls. There was a button that read, "Lightning Fastball." She pushed it just as the nutcracker's hand reached out for her. A ball shot out of the machine's tube and hit the creature between the eyes. Smoke suddenly billowed out of its head, and little sparks of fire popped around inside what had been the robot's brain. A second later, the creature fell over and moved no more. There was a loud clang, and Sabrina turned. Oz had been hiding nearby and knocked over a rack of bicycles in his effort to escape. He raced to the escalators, and the entire family took off after him. As soon as the wizard reached the top of one escalator, he hurried to the next, until he had quickly reached the top of the store. When the Grimms and Puck finally got there, he was nowhere in sight.
"Oz, we know you're up here," Granny Relda called out. "Yeah, you can't hide from us or from the beating you're going to get when we find you," Puck said.
"Shut up, you're not helping," Sabrina said.
"Don't tell me to shut up, I'm a king," Puck said.
"You're an idiot." Just then, an enormous glowing head materialized out of thin air. It seemed to be made of emerald green fire and had horrible black eyes. When its mouth opened, Oz's voice came bellowing out.
"I have never had luck with children. I have to admit, I've always underestimated them, and they have been my undoing."
Puck snatched a giant candy cane decoration off a wall nearby and swung it at the head.
"Ah, shut up!"
The cane passed right through the head, breaking up the image only temporarily.
"Look at Dorothy," the head continued. "That little girl was a moron, I tell you. I mean, dumber than a box of rocks. She comes to me asking for a way back to Kansas. I mean, if you could have a wizard grant a wish, would you waste it on going to Kansas?
and her friends.
Give me a heart! Give me a brain! Give me courage! What they needed was a clue. So I sent them to see the Wicked Witch of the West. Who would have thought they'd ever come back? They ruined everything for me. Well, I won't let it happen again. It's time the wizard got a wish of his own.
Sabrina motioned for everyone to follow her. Oz had to be hiding somewhere nearby. You're not going to get away with this, she muttered.
Oh, but I am,
Oz cried as the head followed her.
After all, I'm the great and terrible wizard. I can do magic, child, and I've got a lot of tricks up my sleeve.
They turned a corner and found the man standing in plain view. He was busy working the buttons on his silver remote control, pounding them frantically and causing the little device to squeal and honk. When he finally noticed the family, he groaned.
Don't look behind the curtain,
he said with an uncomfortable laugh. Oz, give me the book, Sabrina said.
I can't, child, he said.
The wizard shook his head as he pushed a button on his remote, then backed away from the group. Suddenly, there was an incredible rumbling beneath them. The building shifted as a fissure opened up, snaking across the entire floor. Puck and the Grimms were knocked to their knees. The floor was splitting in two to make way for something big, round, and green. It rose higher and higher and got bigger and bigger until it nearly filled the entire store. With nowhere else to go, it pushed through the ceiling, causing concrete and wood to crash down around everyone.
Is this another one of his robots?
Puck shouted as he clung to Sabrina.
No, it's something else, she said, as a large woven basket rose up from below.
It was attached to the giant green orb by ropes and had a silver furnace inside it. The wizard climbed into the basket, and then it too lifted upward. Suddenly, Sabrina knew exactly what the thing was.
It's a hot air balloon.
The basket rose through the hole in the ceiling, and the balloon was aloft.
Give me the journal, Oz,
Sabrina cried.
Is that the wish you want the mighty Oz to grant?
He cried as he rose higher and higher.
Then you will have to do something for me first.
Stop playing games, Granny Relda cried.
You know the story, people. You can have your heart's desire, but you have to do something for me. You have to kill the Wicked Witch of the West.
Sabrina saw Oz push another button on his controller just as the balloon disappeared from sight.
I don't think he's my favorite anymore, Daphne said.
I'll get him, Puck cried, beginning to flap his wings.
But suddenly, there was more loud rumbling from below, and he spun around midair. Sabrina felt it too. It seemed as if the entire building was being rocked back and forth. Then, all at once, the shaking stopped. What was that? Sabrina said. Granny looked around nervously.
I don't know, and I don't like it.
The old woman grabbed Daphne and Sabrina by the hands and hurried them over to the emergency exit. Puck flew after them. Together, the group raced down 9 flights of stairs. They finally reached the ground floor of the department store and found it a disaster. Racks of clothing and broken bottles of perfume were scattered over the floor, and hosiery was draped everywhere. Worst of all, an enormous canyon had opened up in the floor.
Find an exit, children, Granny said.
But before they could take a step, a big black metallic cone began to rise out of the breach in the floor. It rose and rose, expanding as it came.
This can't be good, Puck said.
Soon the enormous cone was completely revealed, but beneath it came another object. This one was also made of metal, though it had a sickly green tint to it. It rose higher and higher, revealing a pair of eyes, one covered in a black patch. Then came a long, pointy, wart-covered nose. Then a mouth with jagged steel fangs. Sabrina knew what was erupting from below. The cone was a hat, and the face was one she'd seen in a book.
She grabbed her sister and her grandmother, shook them until they took their eyes off the growing horror, and together with Puck ran for the closest door.
"What is that thing?"
Puck shouted.
"It's the Wicked Witch of the West!"
Sabrina shouted back. She pushed hard on the door, but it was locked tight. She had forgotten the store was closed. She pounded on the glass, hoping that it would shatter, but she wasn't strong enough. Thankfully, Puck understood the situation. He morphed his arm into that of a gorilla's and punched the door with all his might. Not only did the glass break, but the door flew off its hinges, and the family raced out into the snow. Unfortunately, they were not alone. The streets were packed with people. Taxis, trucks, and cars were everywhere. It was then that Sabrina realized how much easier it was to handle these types of disasters in Ferryport Landing, where the downtown area was usually barren. But here in New York City, the city that never slept, every corner was as crowded as a parade.
"Run!"
Granny Relda yelled, and the family took off down the sidewalk.
"Get off the streets!"
Sabrina shouted to the crowd.
"There's a monster!"
People ignored her and went about their business, but she still tried to get their attention.
"There's a giant robot coming! Run for your lives!"
The family dashed in and out of the crowd and quickly reached the corner of the street. The traffic was intense, so they couldn't just run out into it. They were forced to wait for the light, which gave Sabrina a chance to look back at the store. She did so just in time to see the entire front of the building collapse and a huge leg step through. That got the New Yorkers' attention. Cars drove into trucks. A taxi crashed into a newspaper stand. When the light changed, the family raced across the street, continuing to shout warnings at everyone they saw. Sabrina heard a huge pounding noise and looked back again. The robot was completely free of the store now. It stood nearly 6 stories tall. It scanned the streets and then fixed its horrible electronic gaze on Sabrina. It began to walk in her direction, kicking a taxi cab out of the way. The cab slammed into a light pole and then skidded into the intersection. A truck that had the misfortune of driving near the creature's shoe was knocked aside and sent into a nearby building. The family kept running, but now the pedestrians were getting smart. Suddenly, the wave they had been fighting against turned, and crowds of New Yorkers ran with them. Many looked back as they ran, and a young woman knocked Daphne to the ground in her panic. Puck swooped up the little girl before she was trampled.
"How are we going to stop this thing?"
Puck shouted.
"I think it's going to take more than a couple of fastballs."
"Look,"
Daphne said, pointing above them. Sabrina saw Oz's hot air balloon sailing into the sky. It was strangely close to the Empire State Building. In fact, it was too close. The spire at the top had caught the balloon.
"He can stop the witch,"
Sabrina shouted.
"Head for the Empire State Building."
The family raced on, but the enormous witch grew closer with each giant step. By the time they got to the skyscraper, the robot was right on top of them. They pushed through the revolving doors of the famous building and dashed into the bronze-covered lobby. A security guard got up from his desk and held up his hand.
"We're closed, folks. Come back next week."
"We've got to get to the top now," Sabrina said.
"No can do, people,"
he said, his voice trailing off. Sabrina realized something had captured his attention. She turned to follow his gaze and saw the witch's good eye staring through the front doors. A second later, its enormous hand smashed through the entrance and snaked down the lobby. Its huge, greedy fingers were aimed right at the Grimms and Puck. Sabrina did the only thing she could think of. She dragged her family past the security guard and into the waiting elevator at the end of the hall. She scanned the dozens of buttons and found the one she wanted, observation deck. Then the doors closed and the elevator started to rise.
"You know, I lived in this city for years, and I've never been to the top," Puck said.
"I hope the souvenir shop is still open." The elevator came to a stop. When the door opened, a blast of cold air and snow hit their faces. Through it, they could just see the outline of a hot air balloon, tangled on top of the building. Oz was frantically trying to unfasten several ropes that had caught on the building's spire.
The basket swayed dangerously in the wind, dumping some of its contents onto the roof of the building.
"Turn the witch off!"
Sabrina shouted. Oz looked down and snarled.
"Mr. Diggs, someone is going to get hurt," Granny added. "That is, if they haven't already."
"You fools!"
Oz shouted from his basket.
"What do I care if a bunch of humans die? The Master has promised me that I will rule over them all. A few lives mean nothing to me."
Sabrina looked over the edge of the building. The witch had begun to climb the facade, digging her huge hands into the building's concrete frame. It reminded Sabrina of a movie she had seen once.
"Oz, you told me you were my mother's best friend," she called out to the wizard. "She trusted you. Regardless of your plans, I don't think you wanted to hurt her."
"I didn't. He told me he had a big plan for your parents. He said they'd give birth to a future where ever-afters ruled the world."
Sabrina glanced down again. The witch was now only a dozen floors away from them. Oz paid no attention. He continued to cut his ropes one by one. Puck's wings popped out of his back and flapped fiercely.
"If you try to fly away from here, I will blast the hole in your little balloon. I swear it."
If Oz was worried by the threat, it didn't stop him. He cut the last rope and then waved goodbye. In a flash, Sabrina did something she never would have guessed she had the courage to do. She grabbed the loose rope. Her brain told her to let go. In fact, it was begging her to, but she refused, even as she soared higher and higher into the air. She knew what she was doing was insane. She might die, but the alternative was worse. She couldn't live knowing she'd let her parents' kidnapper get away.
"Let go, you foolish child!"
Oz shouted from above. Sabrina could see he was struggling to untie the rope she was holding onto, but he was having no success.
"How do I wake them up?"
Sabrina cried, pulling herself hand over hand up the rope.
"How do I wake up my parents?"
"This is all pointless, Sabrina. You can't fight the Master or me. The future is coming. Now let go."
"No!"
Sabrina had reached the basket. She grabbed onto the side. The wizard's face filled with sorrow.
"Then I'm sorry, Sabrina."
He pushed her hard, and she lost her grip. She snatched at his hand, but grabbed something small and silver instead. The remote control. Wind filled her ears like a lion's roar, and she could feel gravity pulling her toward the ground.